Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. And on this Valentine's Day, we turn our attention to begin the program to chocolate. Marcus Candinas, our guest today, founder of Candinas Chocolatier or Chocolatier, I think is the other way to pronounce it. Do we say chocolatier here?
Most people say chocolatier. And thank you for having me, by the way, Larry. I was telling the producer, we're in Wisconsin, we're in the U.S. here. I think chocolatier seems like a more appropriate way of saying it, but people can say it however they want. It means the same thing.
Well, I tell you what, Marcus has... his primary business shop is located in Verona, Wisconsin. He also has another store on the square in Madison. So it's great to have him with us to talk about. He makes some wonderful chocolates. And so what better day than to talk about chocolates and making chocolates and finding out what chocolates you like and what kinds of experiences you have with chocolate. Do you enjoy it? Are you a purist? Do you like the innovative flavors? What's your favorite memory involving chocolate? That'd be kind of cool on this Valentine's Day. Give us a call with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. Marcus, you have been very, very successful in this business, founding Candinas. How did you develop this strong interest in chocolates?
It started because as a kid, I always enjoyed eating it. And so at some point, I decided I wanted to learn how to make things that I really enjoyed eating. Uh-huh. And chocolate, of course, is one of them. And to be fair, I learned the confectionery trade as a whole, mm-hmm. Which encompasses not just chocolate, but also French-style mm-hmm. pastries and tarts and yep. All different kinds of delicious things, really. And then I think as an adult, I'm still interested in, chocolate because I still enjoy eating it. But you mentioned something interesting in the introduction there about memories. And I think what's part of what's sustaining me now is just that food is such a memory builder. At least that's how I would characterize it. I mean, I have memories as a kid, as we all do, but many of them I find are in conjunction with food. Yeah. If I think of my grandmother, I think of what food yeah. she made me and the places we went to eat.
Yeah.
When I think of holidays, yes, I think of all my family and all the things that happened, but I think of the traditional foods that we had around the holidays. And it's funny how, even today when we make, say, the almond and hazelnut praline and we're caramelizing almonds, if I try a little bit or even the smell, I immediately think of a mm-hmm. traditional dessert that we had for Christmas. So I think food is really important in that way. And we maybe don't even think about it.
And you were trained in Switzerland, right?
I was, yes.
And is that tradition, the Swiss tradition, different from other areas? Belgium, for example? Or?
Obviously, every country has their own traditions. Switzerland is kind of an interesting place when it comes to chocolate because pretty much every brand name that you can think of, I'm thinking of names like Tobler, Suchard, Lindt, yeah. Cahier, you name it, the name goes on. Those are all old yeah. Swiss guys
yeah.
from the 1800s.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think there was sort of a creative competitiveness that existed at the time because all these brand names existed on a relatively small area, globally speaking. And they kind of fed off of each other's creativity and ideas. And, that history has really turned into...
Yeah.
And even today, Switzerland yeah. is still really known for yeah. fine chocolates.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what about, here you are in the dairy state. Is being located here a positive for you?
Well, I guess that kind of leads into another question: is why did I choose Madison or the you know, Wisconsin for opening up my business? And yeah, it's certainly a good place to be, the dairy state. But I think what was really the, if I'm honest, the reason why I came back here is, one, I grew up in Madison, and having traveled all over the world and all around the U.S., I saw a lot of neat, interesting things and met a lot of great people. But I think if you're trying to sell somebody something, it's really important to know how people think.
Know your audience.
And certainly in the U.S., we're a lot more homogenous as a society than, say, the Europeans, where, you know, languages will change literally from 1 mile to the next. Here, you know, it is much more homogenous, but we sometimes forget that, yeah, people do think differently on the West Coast from the East Coast and from various points in between. And I think I recognized this early on, and I decided, well, you know, we don't really have a lot of fine chocolate in the U.S., certainly not not when I started up. And even today, it's not that prevalent. So I felt it was really important to have some sort of a bond with the people I'm going to be trying to sell my product to, be able to, you know, understand what people really want here and what their expectations are and what they're used to.
I tell you what, LaVon in Madison is with us. Let's go to LaVon. Hi, LaVon.
Hi, Larry. Happy Valentine's Day.
To you as well.
I just wanted to call to say when I gave birth, actually I had cesareans with my in 2001 and 2003 with my daughters. That was my request, was Candina's chocolate. I wanted them to be there when I woke up from my surgeries, and they were there, and I was very happy. So I thought you would like to know that.
Oh, that's great. Thanks, LaVon. Comments?
It sounds like her kids are in the background there, so maybe they're listening too, and we'll know in the future.
Oh,
thank you.
Oh, thanks, LaVon. Thank you very much for calling. Well, that's a great – do you get a lot of stories like that?
I do, and this really, you know, echoes what I was just saying before about memories. Is you know, there's some really powerful memories associated with food for all of us, and it's really extremely flattering when I hear these things, because yeah, it makes you feel really good about what you do, that it creates such powerful positive memories.
Oh, absolutely, and you make. I wanted to talk about a little bit about the process of making chocolate, and you make these wonderful, how many different types of chocolate?
Varieties. At any given time, I know this morning we had 14 varieties. That's about normal. Sometimes it's a couple less. Sometimes it's one or two more. But, you know, we try and keep a pretty small assortment that's always turning over and is always fresh rather than having 40, 50 different varieties where, you know, some of them maybe aren't turning over, because freshness is a really important part of any food. And chocolate is no exception to that. So
for you, to talk a little bit just about this general process of how do you make chocolate? How do you make it?
Well, I can't give away all our secrets.
Well, no.
what some people think is that we actually start with the cocoa beans and turn that into fashion that into chocolates, and that's not actually the case. It's actually two very, very important but completely different processes that happen. One is, like I said, using the beans and turning it into chocolate. Mm-hmm. Chocolate, if you will.
Yeah.
The raw chocolate. And that's a process that is an art in itself. It is usually better suited for the larger organizations that have a larger network. And it's also something that is very shelf stable. It will keep for literally years if stored correctly. So it's really well suited for the larger manufacturers. And then you turn around and you look at turning that chocolate into, shall we say, fine chocolates, truffles, pralines, where you start adding cream and fruits and things like that. That's where the perishability comes into play.
Yeah.
And it's also a whole different kind of process, different things that you have to look out for and do. And that in turn suits itself better for the smaller manufacturer where you don't have the times and transit and getting it from one place to another and all those things. So it's really perfect for a small manufacturer to make locally.
And sell locally for the most part.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Although we do ship as well. So, you know.
What's your website, by the way?
Candinas.com.
Candinas.com. Take a look at the website. Let's go to Gabby in Madison. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, happy Valentine's Day to both you guys.
To you as well.
Thank you.
And I just have, it's kind of a sad story, and it's about my husband, but was once my boyfriend, obviously. About 25 years ago, when there were only two fanny-something companies in town, I got one of those big red heart boxes of chocolate, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Oh, about four layers worth. And my then-boyfriend, now husband, watched me plow through half the box prior to the dinner, and then the other half after dinner, and the next day he said, where are these half-eaten jelly things in here? Where's the rest of it? And ever since then, seriously, he will only purchase me like four pieces of chocolate, maybe.
Well, at least he knew that you liked them.
So, Gabby, now you get four pieces, but, well, actually, and you... This is something else. You actually sell, and I assume many chocolatiers do as well, a variety of sizes. We've got a nice size here in front of us, but you have a pack that...
Yeah, we have five different sizes in all, actually.
Yeah, five different sizes.
The smallest is a two, yeah. For Valentine's Day, it tends to be more the bigger sizes that sell. I don't know if it's peer pressure or if it's stories similar to a previous caller. I don't know, but the big sizes do tend to move a little bit more on Valentine's Day.
Thanks, Gabby. Lori and Franklin, let's go to you next. Hi, Lori.
Oh, hi. I love chocolate, I went to, I think it was Walgreens one time. And I went up and down the aisle, and I was so hungry for chocolate that I wouldn't buy any. And it's because none of it was fair trade. I don't know if your guest knows what I'm talking about or not.
Yeah, I do. You know, the funny thing is fair trade is a great thing. We endorse it. We support it. But to be fair, one has to remember that it is a brand name. There are other organizations that do similar things to the fair trade. In other words, or for example, I should say the Rainforest Initiative is another organization that really endorses and works with a lot of chocolate manufacturers in Europe. I think they work with people everywhere, but fair trade is more well known here in the U.S., but you know, there are other organizations that do great work that use a different name.
Chocolate pays very much attention to the ecology, and that's good, you know.
Yep.
Fair trade, well, I'm with you. Stephen Wallace is a local guy, lives in Bayview, was an exchange student in Ghana, if that tells you where I'm going, and wanted to do something for Ghana. He fell in love with it. And the chocolate there is really good, right?
Well, beans come from all over the world, specifically the tropics. And yes, a lot of beans do come from Ghana as well. So, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, they claim that the chocolate from that area is just the best, you know? Mm-hmm. And then he says he goes around and talks now, and he doesn't have his fair trade certified, but he claims that he is working the whole supply chain as much as possible right in Ghana so that the people of that country can benefit from their labor.
Yeah. That's great. That's great.
That's wonderful. You work with, I assume, chocolates from a variety of places.
Well, we use how many different varieties of actual chocolate do we use?
Yeah.
I think we have 14 different varieties of chocolate that we use to make our different chocolates. And they are mixed and matched according to flavor and how to get whatever flavors we want to get out of a different variety. So, yeah, we use a lot of different varieties, and the beans come from a lot of different parts of the world, certainly from Ghana. Africa is a large, I believe, actually the largest producer of beans, but South America is very big as well. So,
thanks again, Laurie, for calling. Our guest today, Marcus Candinas, founder of Candinas Chocolatier in Verona, Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mealer. Judith Sears-Poisson, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking chocolate on this Valentine's Day with Marcus Candinas, founder of Candinas Chocolatier in Verona, Wisconsin. Great to have him along. Thank you for listening in. Join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. And Matt in Lake Geneva has a question or comment for you. Marcus?
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call on
sure.
this wonderful subject. I think it was the ancient Greeks, maybe Hippocrates, who said, let your food be your medicine and your medicine be your food. I consider dark chocolate to be good medicine. And I take a few ounces every day, at least. And I'm wondering about the soy content, though, of chocolate. I'm trying to avoid having an intake of soy every day. And I've noticed that most chocolatiers now are using soy lecithin. They label it as an emulsifier. Lindt is a brand I like. I was enjoying their 70% dark, but they added soy lecithin to it. So now I'm using their 85% dark, which still doesn't contain soy lecithin. And I want to ask you about baking chocolate. Can I get some semi-sweet or bittersweet baking chocolate without soy? I'm having a hard time finding it.
You know, I think soy lecithin, and you're right, it is used as an emulsifier in chocolate, has been in chocolate certainly as long as I've been around and probably quite a bit longer. I think actually the trend is that chocolate companies are ceasing to use the soy lecithin.
No.
Just because they can. It doesn't really have a flavor impact one way or the other, but technology has just kind of evolved where they can do without. And I think it's been one of those things that they just feel like it's I hate to use the word gimmick, but I think that's kind of how it is right now. It's just not fashionable to have soy in it, so a lot of these manufacturers are not using it for that reason. You're also correct that Lindt does use soy lecithin. You know, and I'm with you too that Lindt is one of my favorite brands. But I think the trend is that more and more manufacturers are coming away from it. And when I say manufacturers, it's the larger manufacturers that make the chocolate itself. Usually when the manufacturers like I get a hold of it, we don't add anything like that. And it's already in there. And it's also in there in very, very, very small amounts, in trace amounts. But to be fair, it is still in there. So.
Yeah, there it is. There you go. Thank you for calling. John in Germantown has a question or comment. Hi, John.
Hi, Larry. How are you doing today?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Beautiful. Thank you. It's a beautiful day. My question is this. I love chocolate, too. In fact, Lindt 70% is one of my favorites because it's got, you know, the calories per portion is so low and it's the carbs are so low. But I noticed in the when you buy German chocolates, like you're a standard over-the-counter, the flavor is seems to be so much more flavorful than American chocolates. And I was talking to a gentleman out of Manchester, England, who used to have a food store in Milwaukee, and he said, well, that's because they use cocoa butter. Is there a difference in the processing and the manufacturing of chocolate in the U.S. compared to Europe?
Yes, I think these days pretty much all the fine chocolate manufacturers use cocoa butter in their chocolate. And it's funny that you should mention someone in the UK because as far as Europe goes, when the EU formed a few years ago, that was a very contentious point for the Europeans because essentially all of mainland Europe insisted that for something to be declared chocolates and truffles, it must use cocoa butter. And the UK actually at that time did not want to go along with that because a lot of the brands there did not use it. I think that's one of those things that in the last 15 years or so has become much more commonplace that you do not replace the cocoa butter that naturally occurs in the cocoa bean. Replace it with other vegetable oils and fats. But there certainly are a lot of manufacturers that still use things other than cocoa butter. And the reason they use it is really because of ease of use.
Yeah.
The cocoa butter, while it does taste much better and has better properties as far as from a health standpoint, the other shortenings are just easier to use. They're not as sensitive. I should also say that I forgot to mention to the previous caller where you could get good chocolate for baking,
yes.
And I think we kind of glossed over that element.
That's right.
It's hard to find. I know we have a chocolate that we use from a manufacturer that does not use any soy in it. Unfortunately, they do not sell over the counter, so to speak, to customers. They really only sell to chocolate manufacturers. So you'd have to track down a chocolate manufacturer like us in order to get it. They're out there. I would probably suggest maybe doing a little internet search and going that route, or going to a smaller chocolatier that has a lot of different chocolate to use.
Thank you.
And sell.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Well, when I lived in Trinidad I lived there for a year and taught at the University of the West Indies. I remember going to just a grocery store the first time and picked a chocolate bar off the counter, and oh my goodness, it tasted so much better than a chocolate bar that you might get, you know, off a grocery store shelf here. I was amazed.
Yeah, I mean, we have things are changing, I think, in the U.S.
This was several years back.
Yeah, I mean, one has to acknowledge that the food habits in the U.S. have been changing for a long time. I remember growing up, and unsalted butter was something that was difficult to find. You know, you think a couple decades back, and it was the bottomless cup of coffee, and today it's all about cappuccinos and lattes and so forth. Food habits are changing, and I think manufacturers are recognizing that. I mean, even Hershey's has a higher cocoa content because that's you know, again, it's kind of vogue these days, so they get along with it. Food habits are changing, and manufacturers are recognizing that.
Well, now let's talk a little bit more about your chocolates before we go back to the phones. By the way, you can join in with your own questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Before we get to that, I had an email from Bonnie in Mount Horeb. It says, I made up baskets of only Wisconsin-made items. I put 4 boxes of Candina's chocolate in. Thanks for the wonderful chocolate. Oh, that's a nice thing.
Thank you.
A nice question. But let's go back to, how do you decide? You've got now 14 different flavors here, and different chocolates and different things that go in the chocolate. How do you decide?
It's difficult. I mean, there's so many different flavors that go good with chocolate. You really can't go wrong. Like I was saying earlier, we try to keep our assortment relatively small, so that it's always fresh and turning over. So if we make a new variety, that usually means something else has to go. And when we do that, then we invariably have somebody who comes in and says, oh, but
what happened to
it? I miss. When are you going to make that one again? And that's what we have too now all the time is, you know, people will come in and say, oh, I really remember having the Earl Grey or the Rose or whatever it is that we made maybe years ago. And why don't you make that again? It's really difficult. It'd be nice to constantly come up with new flavors, and that's enjoyable. But at the end of the day, it gets really difficult because people they want everything. You know,
and, Well, here's what someone said of your chocolates, talking about your chocolates, which would I choose if I prefer dark, straight chocolate, no fillings, no nuts, just chocolate?
Well, everything that we do has fillings, because that's really... it's what makes a truffle a truffle, and that's what we specialize in. But when you have things that don't have a filling, you're talking about bars, and that's the kind of thing that really lends itself perfectly to a large-scale manufacturer that can pump those out in numbers that you and I can't even really imagine or fathom. So we let those manufacturers do that, and we do the things that we do best, which is the truffles and the pralines.
Well, Judith says the chocolate raspberry truffle has a lovely licorice liqueur-ish flavor and a wonderful melting texture. And the elderflower-infused truffle has a nice, very nice citrusy flavor.
Those were the two that she took, and yeah, they both have that kind of fruity note.
She's ahead of me buying chocolates. She's eaten two, and I've had one, and I'm just staring at these chocolates in front of me. Judith, did you put a picture up, by the way? We're going to put a picture, a photo up on our webpage of the chocolates. They're just gorgeous. Judith took a picture, and she'll post it up on our Facebook page. So go to the Larry Mueller Show. You'll get a look at what those chocolates look like. Oh, my goodness. Patricia in Traverse City, Michigan has a question, comment for you. Let's go there. Patricia, hi.
Hello. I would like to know if your guest is familiar with this rediscovered species of chocolate from South America that is apparently available from San Francisco now. It goes by the name Fortunato Number 4.
I am not familiar with that one. We do use our manufacturer, I should say our company.
Yeah.
We do use one particular chocolate, which is wild cocoa beans from Bolivia. But I'm not familiar with that specific bean that you're talking about there. You say specifically from a manufacturer in San Francisco?
Well, actually, that's where it's distributed, from someone in San Francisco. But
okay.
Apparently a man went to South America, and I don't know if he happened upon it or what, but it was considered to be extinct, and he found it in some remote place, and the villagers there said, yes, this is, yeah. And they, you know, they knew that it was there. And apparently it took some time for him to transplant and grow enough of it to produce.
Be able to sell.
Where is he growing it now, then?
Well, I don't know where he's growing it. I just know that it's available from a place in San Francisco.
Interesting.
Oh. Yeah. And it's called, what is it called?
It goes by the name Fortunato Number 4.
It okay. It makes one wonder if there's a Fortunato Number 3 and 2. And
tell you what, we'll see what I'll see what I can come up with in the way of a little more information on that. And we'll post it if I can find something. Patricia, thank you very much for calling. Phil in McHenry, Illinois, it's your turn. Hi, Phil.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. I've read a lot about the Lindt's and the Cadbury's, and I already have an opinion on this, but I want to ask your chocolatier, is white chocolate chocolate?
It's funny because Judith was asking me, the producer here was asking me about that subject when we came in. You know, I guess that's a never-ending question, and if I gave you an answer, it would probably just be an opinion. I can give you a definition of what makes, you know, milk chocolate and dark chocolate and white chocolate. The white chocolate, what makes it still chocolate, or the only thing that has something to do with the cocoa bean in it, is the cocoa butter. White chocolate is essentially just milk solids, sugar, and cocoa butter. The milk chocolate would be those same ingredients, in other words, sugar, milk solids, cocoa butter, but it also has cocoa solids, in other words, the dark meat that is inside the cocoa bean. And then dark chocolate is, in its purest form, is simply the cocoa butter, the cocoa meat, and obviously some sugar as well. Although, if you go to a 100% cocoa chocolate, it has zero chocolate in it. Or excuse me, zero chocolate. Zero sugar is what I meant to
sugar.
Say. Excuse me. But that gets to be, that gets pretty bitter.
Oh, man, that would, does anybody use that for anything?
Well, we use it, but it's a component in
okay.
different recipes. It's one of those things, as are most really dark chocolates, they were really developed more for pastries initially,
mm-hmm.
Where you have other things that are maybe sweeter and you need just a little bit to give you a lot of flavor. That's really what it's used for.
Okay. Ray in Madison. on to you. Hi, Ray.
Hey, hi there. I'm hoping you can answer a question that's been nagging me. A friend of mine who just goes on and on about his love of Godiva chocolate. And then I pipe in and say, well, yeah, that's great. And, you know, I like all chocolate, and I like Hershey bars, too. And then he says, oh, that's, you know, he goes on like that's the scraping the bottom of the barrel. And then he extols the virtues of Godiva, like quality, taste, texture, all this. I'm just wondering, is it true that Hershey's is maybe a, I don't know, lower echelon kind of chocolate or at the lower end of quality?
You know, I would say that chocolate is one of those things that a lot of people get really snooty about. And I would say eat what you like to eat. You know, chocolate should be fun. Everything has its place. They're just different products. A Hershey bar really can't be compared to Godiva, and what we do, Candiness, really can't be compared to Godiva either. They're just different products. A Hershey bar is essentially a candy bar. Godiva has fillings in it. It would be really hard for Candinas to have come along in the early 90s had Godiva not come up on the American marketplace in the early 70s. So I have to, you know, give them some credit. But it is a different product. You know, they have a product that has a much, much, much longer shelf life than what we have. It's just a different product.
No, there you go. Thanks, Ray.
Yeah, not a problem.
Appreciate your call. Dave and Harshaw, on to you. Hi, Dave.
Hi, am I online?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm calling. I have a question about adding chocolate to ice cream. I have a freshman ice cream that I make that I chop up 70% cocoa bar and melt it and drizzle it into the ice cream while it's churning.
Yeah. Okay.
And that comes out real good as far as distributing the chocolate and the ice cream. But the problem is, once the chocolate is so cold in the ice cream, it doesn't want to dissolve in your mouth when you chew it. It's so cold it almost sticks to your teeth like wax.
Right.
And I'm wondering if there's a way to like melt it, lower the melting point of the chocolate before I drizzle it in. Can you add an oil or something to it? Do you know that I could do?
I'm just going to operate under the assumption that you're using high quality chocolate that doesn't have any paraffins or oils like that in it. The question came up earlier, you know, as far as cocoa butter versus not using cocoa butter in chocolate. One of the unique properties that cocoa butter has is that it melts below body temperature. So that's why you don't have that waxy taste coating the inside of your mouth. However, because we're talking ice cream, and ice cream is obviously very cold, chocolate, when you eat it then, is already a little bit colder as well, and won't melt as easily in your mouth. You'll have to keep it in your mouth a little bit longer for it to melt, or you basically chew it up in its cold state and swallow it without it melting, which then you don't really get the full flavor of it. To give you a direct answer of how I would solve that, I would probably recommend maybe mixing some of the chocolate with some of the ice cream in a melted state, and then adding that mixture of melted ice cream with chocolate into the freezing, I should say, ice cream. That way, it will be already a little bit diluted with cream and other ingredients, and will not be as hard. So that might be a solution. I would be remiss to suggest adding any sort of additives, oils, or anything like that. I guess it's a matter of experimenting too a little bit and seeing what you enjoy.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot. And Beth in Milwaukee. Hi, Beth.
Hi, thanks. Well, there's a really large chain chocolate company that was out of business for a while, and then they came back, and now they're in business again. And I remember I used to really love them, and then I found better chocolate, but my sister could never stop eating it. And my question is, I read in a paper, I think it was the Chicago Tribune, that I read it while the company was not in business, and they said that one of their ingredients is an additive that is addictive, and that was the only reason why they put it in there. So
Well, some people say that chocolate in itself is addictive, and there's some evidence to suggest that that's true. You know, we know from some studies that chocolate helps the brain produce what I believe is called phenylethylamine. Mm-hmm. Long word. Basically, what it means is it's what the body produces when we feel happy or to make us feel happy, and eating chocolate helps us produce that. So, given that, you know, I guess there's some degree of evidence maybe to suggest that chocolate itself is something that can be addictive for that reason.
All right. Thanks, Beth. Jake in Oshkosh. Hi.
Is there a difference between, quote, summer chocolate and the rest of the chocolate? Do they actually add more wax in summer?
Oh.
Well, we don't add any wax
ever.
So I guess from our standpoint, the answer to your question would be no, there's no difference. But I can't speak for other manufacturers. You know, if they do things to make it more, shall we say, shelf stable in the summer than, mm-hmm. than in the winter. Yeah, certainly some varieties will hold their shape better in warmer temperatures than others. Mm-hmm. But again, that's not something that we get into. We make what we feel is the perfect chocolate, and it should be consumed at the same temperature, whether it's summer or winter.
You do make lovely chocolate, and business has been pretty good.
Well, Valentine's Day is kind of a given in the chocolate world. If you're not busy around Valentine's Day,
you better.
There's something not right with the world, I guess. It's one of the highest traffic holidays.
Although other times of the year, you may even sell more.
Well, December is really busy then because you have a lot of gift giving for a lot of different. Different reasons, a lot of different holidays, corporate gift giving.
And so people are buying more boxes. And Valentine's is probably a...
Generally, it's just one box.
You have one wife or one lover or whatever. That
people give chocolate to their kids and their parents and things like that as well. But around the December holidays, you get chocolate being given in much larger quantities. You know, you give it to all your friends. You give it to almost everybody you know, it seems like sometimes. So in that way, it does differ from Valentine's Day.
And your website again, Marcus?
Is Candinas.com.
Candinas, C-A-N-D-I-N-A-S, Candinas.com. And take a look at the website. It's wonderful. There's a lot of really good information on there and some wonderful pictures of chocolates. It is a pleasure. And you're enjoying this. This has got to be a great life. And the man is fit. He's in really good shape. He is not... He is not someone that
But I eat it every day. I swear to you, I do.
You eat it every day?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's the base of my food pyramid, but, you know, it's everything in moderation.
Yeah.
I eat it every day, and it's, you know, like the other caller was saying, is there something addictive in chocolates? Or she's suggesting another manufacturer added something. But it's just something that makes us feel good, that tastes good. And,
yeah.
How can you not enjoy working with it every day?
You got a great job. Thank you very much, Marcus.
Thank you,
for coming and for bringing the chocolate. It's wonderful stuff. Marcus Candinas, founder of Candinas Chocolatier, Verona, Wisconsin, has a shop in Madison on the square as well. A shop that I have frequented on a number of occasions, as a matter of fact. And it's great to have him along on this Valentine's Day. Coming up, you know, chocolate, great, obviously on Valentine's Day and days like that. But also, we probably will be uncorking a few bottles of wine on this Valentine's Day. And Philippe Coquart from Wallersheim Winery joins us next to talk about wines and wine for Valentine's Day. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.